Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Are you a small business owner who thinks they pay too much in taxes? We can help. Give us a call or book a meeting by clicking the link in the show notes to book a free financial consultation so you can have peace of mind about your financial future. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as a key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, back at it again, and I'm Robin Bailey. And as always, here's my co-host, Al McDonald. Al, how is your day going so far?
Going great. Always a pleasure to be here. And I know we always talk about meeting great people and having great conversations.
We do.
Lately, it's funny, some of the feedback we've been getting from some of our guests in terms of how much they've enjoyed the show. And we've gotten a couple of emails back lately that have said, you know, I've done a few podcasts and this is my favorite. This is the one that I really enjoyed the most. So thanks for the great and the kind words, because it's great to hear that. You know, we just do this for fun and we take pleasure in getting to know people, but it's great to get that feedback. So.
Well, and I know the email you're talking about, and this particular person has been on many podcasts because I've heard him on other podcasts, and he's also on some TV news shows. So that was kind of nice. That was nice to hear that this was one of his favorites. So hopefully today's guest will feel the same way after we're finished recording. But joining us today is Jordan Bosch. I hope I've said that correctly. He is the CEO of Seven Shifts, and we're going to talk more about that and find out a little more about his company. Welcome to the show, Jordan.
Thanks for having me, Robin. Good to be here.
Well, Jordan, it was great to get an introduction to you. And the first time we met, you know, to see if, hey, there was an opportunity to record together. We hit it off. We had a great conversation. And I always love sharing ideas and challenges with other entrepreneurs because we all face them. It's, you don't just arrive one day and everything's a success. We all have those ups and downs. So it's really nice to share ideas with people. And that's really the purpose of the podcast. But why don't we start with your company? Can you tell us just the Coles Notes about your company and what you do and where you start?
Yeah, Coles Notes about Seven Shifts is we are a scheduling and team management company for the restaurant industry. So what that means is we help operators schedule their staff, facilitate conversations with their teams when they want to communicate, trade shifts, and they can do this all from the mobile phone, from their pocket, when they're on the go, and manage their business on the fly as it relates to their staff and team. Where we got started is an interesting one. I grew up working for my dad who ran bunch of Quiznos restaurants. And it was a great experience in that it was my first job in the food space. And I learned a lot dealing with customers on a regular basis. But one of the challenges that I noticed that my dad was going through in particular was just managing staff and communicating schedules out and making sure that if someone wanted to trade shifts and there was the right person coming in, and there was often a lot of miscommunication around this kind of stuff. And so I was very curious and very interested in programming at the time. And I was getting a little bit into web development. And so I taught myself how to write some code to build something really small and rudimentary to try and help him with this problem. And really, if you look at the genesis of Seven Shifts, it was really the most alpha of alpha MVP products I think you could come up with, which was just the ability to upload an Excel spreadsheet that he was already working on and having all the staff essentially share a username and password to download it from their home. So we've come a long way since then, but the first step was really just giving them that access quickly without having to phone the store, without having to physically come into the store to find out where they work. And that's sort of what got the ball rolling.
That's really cool that you're able to work with your dad, because I always love hearing that origin story about like why and how did you end up where you were. And for most people who listen to this podcast, or at least listen to a few episodes, they've heard me talk about my dad. And my dad was a new immigrant to Canada and eventually found his way to insurance. And I was dad's last chance at carrying on that legacy. So that's how I found my way. So hearing that your dad was somewhat of an entrepreneur himself, and shout out to Quiznos. Do you remember the double cheese melt?
I love Quiznos.
Do you remember the double cheese melt, Jordan?
I remember the double cheese melt. That was a vegetarian sub, I think. Was it not? I think it was.
It was. And then they officially took it off the menu at some point, but they would still, our local Quiznos would make it for my wife because she just loved that one. So do you think that's where your approach comes from? Do you think it comes from your dad growing up and seeing your dad buy into a franchise and start running that? Is that where it happened for you?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's directly tied to seeing him run a business versus innately feeling the desire to just solve a problem that I was passionate about. There wasn't a moment that I can recall where it was like, oh, I want to run a business like him. That's why I'm going to make this solution for him. It was, I feel like I can help him. I want to make a solution for him. And I really didn't know where it would go. It was always a fun just side project to me. And because I'm naturally curious and I love learning, it ended up leading to a different set of outcomes for me. But it was really more inspired by solving the pain point that I saw him go through every day. And I always tell people, even to this day, there's no amount of money you can pay me that gets me more excited than someone seeing value for work that I helped contribute to. So I think that that's really where I get my gratification come. And what fuels me is doing work on something and someone going, this is helping me tremendously. Thank you. And that to me is what fuels me.
Hey, so it almost sounds from your previous description that you were almost like the original cloud service.
I think that there's obviously like some folks at the time that were doing some much more innovative things, but to me, this felt very innovative.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you were ahead of the curve for sure. From what you described, it sounds like what you're doing could easily be applicable to a lot of other industries. And I know obviously you've got the connection with your dad with Quiznos, but why the restaurant industry specifically? Like it sounds like you could use this across a number of different industries.
Yeah. And maybe I'll back up a little bit in our journey to explain how we got here. While we started the company that was inspired by my dad who ran quick service restaurants, it sort of took on a life of its own and we attracted a lot of other industries. So retail, construction, medical, we had a lot of folks that were using Seven Shifts. And the company was at the time, it was just me. And then I had a few other co-founders that joined me. And then we moved to the Bay Area because we wanted to make this a bigger tech company. We thought that's where we can do it and that's where we can learn. And we did learn a lot down there working beside a lot of other companies. And while we were there, there was this element of focus that was talked about. And we're kind of struggling with like, what do we build next? We have all these requests from all these industries. How do you prioritize them? And we thought, well, why don't we just focus on restaurants? And everyone's sort of like, oh my God, don't do restaurants. They can't pay for anything. They're so cheap. You know, margins are so low. Why would you focus on that space? And to me, all those responses just screamed opportunity to me. And we knew that by focusing on restaurants, that it would isolate essentially 2/3 of our customers that were not restaurants. So you come to the site, you're a construction company, and all of a sudden you see pictures of servers and the restaurant scenes, and you're sort of starting to feel like, is this for me? And we did see folks cancel their accounts with us and churn. And it was scary at first, but the feeling of wanting to go to restaurants was really rooted in the fact that we felt like we were the jack of all, master of none. And we believed in a world where if you can order a shirt online that's tailored exactly to your needs, you know, you put in your measurements, you get a shirt shipped to you. Software is probably going to start to feel the same. And I think we were just getting into this transition of like Mark Andreessen talks about, he's a venture capitalist, talks about software eating the world. And there were a lot of software companies coming up and focused on very niche areas. So we saw ourselves as sort of getting in front of the curve and focusing on something that we would ultimately carve out as our niche and our differentiator to win in the space.
So maybe you can talk about then how that's worked out for you, some of the takeaways from that. And I'm sure there still had to be some obstacles along the way. Like, what did you learn when you made that pivot?
We learned that change is hard and scary to go through something like that. But I would say that we were better off for that. And it helped us focus our energy and efforts on what should we build next. And there was no longer discussions of, we were getting lost in all the noise of everyone always talking about various needs in various industries and pulled in a million different directions. I think we felt more focused over time. And what that did, it allowed other partners in the restaurant space to see what we were doing. And we attracted a lot of restaurant-specific partners. And we integrated with them, like point-of-sale companies and payroll companies that were doing restaurants. And the byproduct of that is that you create this very sticky product now where restaurants sort of feel like this, my point of sales for restaurants, my team management's for restaurants, my whatever else is for restaurants, they start to feel like they're understood because the people building the software for them deeply understand the pains of restaurants. And so that was an exciting outcome, but it didn't happen right away. It took a big shift and for us to start to be known for that and us to really target restaurants. And so that was a big learning for us. But I think if I could do it again, I wouldn't change anything.
Jordan, you mentioned Mark Andreessen. Is that who wrote the book? Was it The Hard Thing About Hard Things?
That was his partner.
Horowitz, maybe? Ben Horowitz?
Yeah, Ben Horowitz. Yeah.
A really good book. I read it a couple of years ago. And it's interesting when I look at my own career, which started at the big insurance companies. And I remember thinking, because I always had an idea of running my own shop and being an entrepreneur. And I remember thinking, one of my frustrations with working with a big insurance company was how slowly things worked. And I saw that in terms of, hey, the insurance company is adapting to the changing demographics of the workforce and what was going on in the world. But I also saw it as a limiting factor in me moving forward and doing the things that I want to do. You're at a smaller firm, you're scaling. Can you just maybe talk about how that relates to culture within a small company that you're able to move a lot faster in scale compared to these larger companies that are out there as your competitors or just prior places that you worked?
Yeah, I think there is a freeing feeling of being able to move quickly in a smaller company. And I think what's been interesting along our journey is that you kind of go from this very tight-knit group early days and you're all kind of, you know each other really well. And it's just, you all kind of are just banding together and fixing things and building things. And you're riding off this high and there's not a whole lot of process. And then as we were building the company, that started to become more challenging, right? You have now 30, 40 people and you need some lightweight process around how you build things. And so I think for me, it was always thinking of what is the most minimal bite-sized amount of process that we need to implement. The sort of like, what is the 20% of the process that gives us 80% of the results? Like, let's not boil the ocean. And I think that you're kind of doing two things. You're seeing what is that right threshold that you need to implement to still keep moving, but also bringing people into the business that sort of fit that threshold. And what I mean by that is not everyone is going to thrive in a 20, 30 person company, and not everyone's going to thrive in a 500 person company. There are, I think, areas where people find that they're in their sweet spot. And if you bring someone in that's not a fit for that spot that you're in, where you're 20, 30 people, and they're used to being in a big corporation with lots of decision makers and lots of process, and suddenly there's this amount of freedom or flexibility that it could be uncomfortable for them.
I was going to say it could be chaos for the wrong person, right? In that environment.
Yeah. And what that does is it actually creates a toxic environment, regardless of if the individual meant for that to happen or not. And so it's up to leaders in the business at the time to really suss out what are going to be the best folks to bring in at the right time. And I really believe if you can really think about the behaviors you're trying to hire for it at inflection points of the business, it's going to help that make that a lot easier. And when I think about behaviors, I think I relate it back to core values. And we didn't have core values in the early days. And it was a lot of, if someone didn't feel like a fit, we would part ways with them. And I think that that is not wrong in when you're early days and you have to make quick calls and you really need to keep the ship moving. As you get bigger, that really doesn't scale. You need to build a culture in which people can suss out who is going to be successful here and who's not going to be successful. And ideally, you're putting those guardrails or sussing those behaviors out in the actual hiring process because you don't want to waste anyone's time. And so when we were probably 30 people, we got together and said, okay, well, we should have some behaviors and values that we look at in terms of bringing people into this organization as we scale it. And I always thought core values, and like you see them in big companies, and like they're so, I just didn't think they were valuable. Like you see like one words like, I don't know, respect. And
yeah,
you know, it's like, I don't know, what do you, it just felt so inauthentic. I really like this post by Jeff Lawson, the CEO of Twilio. And I think that the post was called like Draw the Owl, I believe. And it was talking about culture and how they did it. And what I really liked is his approach. He got, and we, by the way, we did this early days. He grabbed his founders into a room and whiteboarded and said, if we could clone two or three people here, so 10% of our company, say you're 30 people at the time, what characteristics do those people have that we want to find in others? And they just whiteboarded all these traits that, like, because right away they all knew who the top performers were. When you're that small, you know who, it's sort of like your oxygen people. You can't live without their amazing A players. And they wrote down all these traits, and then they started circling ones that were similar, and then they eliminated some. And then what they did, and again, what we did was we boiled it down to sort of like five traits. And then we brought those people into the room with us. And we said, here's the exercise we just did. We're trying to build a bigger company. We love where we're at in terms of the behaviors. We think you folks demonstrate the exact behaviors that we want long-term. Can you sort of help us refine these and be part of the rollout process? And what that did was it made them feel really excited and happy and grateful that they were seen that way. But then it built this sense of ownership and accountability that it wasn't such a noun. It was sort of like we, the people with some of these top performers that everyone else knew was a top performer, were part in building in these values. And I think that went a long way when it came to rolling them out. Because when the founders aren't in the room, people are going to talk. But if you have some of your employees there that are the A players that were part of this process, they could say, no, guys, like we were in on this. Like, this is awesome, right? And they're sort of getting everyone else rallied around this idea of how it was rolled out. So I think, and look, we refined things later on and we tweaked things, but I think more than anything, our values were behavior-based. They were being radically candid, embrace new challenges, act like an owner, make every experience an 11 and solve with simplicity. And the reason we had these values action-based was because we wanted to point to them and it'd be really clear why you demonstrated or didn't demonstrate that value. So in an ambiguous world with the word respect, someone could say, well, Robin, you know, you didn't show me respect. And then you'll say, well, what do you mean? And you'll say, well, you weren't listening to me when I was talking to you. And so for us, when we were setting our behavior-based values, we were sort of like, well, then that's the thing. We should say, is a good listener, right? That's the behavior we want to drive, not an ambiguous word, because I think that can be interpreted a lot of different ways. So when we say like solve with simplicity and we see someone doing something really complex and boiling the ocean, we say, hey, Robin, you're not solving with simplicity here. You need to take a step back. And I think that that's helped folks understand what it means to demonstrate the behaviors and what it doesn't. Another thing that we do now and we've done for a number of years that I think is really helpful in companies that are growing is we have a system, and it took like, it's now a flywheel, where people in the company submit core value stories every single day into a Slack channel. We actually use 7Geese and it's an integration. But the point is, people are submitting stories about other people in the company that demonstrated that value. Then every month, I read through every single story that's submitted, and there's a lot. Again, it was built in early days, and so the flywheel has kind of taken effect. Then I read through them and I pick the best demonstration of that value. And at our monthly all hands, I go through them and I read that story to everyone. And I think why that's important is people need to be constantly reminded what that means. What does it mean to be radically candid? What does it mean to embrace new challenges? Because you want those behaviors to be reinforced constantly. And sometimes I'll read stories that people submit and I'll go, that's not a really good example. And I'll message them and I'll say, hey, like, can you give me more information? Can you tell me a little bit more about it? So it's an ongoing thing where you're adding like more people to the business all the time. They're not up to speed like the other people are that have been here for 5 years. They need to be indoctrinated into the culture in a way. Like, they need to know what that means to demonstrate those behaviors. And I think that has been a really underemphasized value point in a company that's scaling that largely contributes to a lot of the success we've seen.
Jordan, if you were holding a mic right now after that answer, you would drop it, because that would be a mic drop moment. Like, I can almost guarantee you or me, and hopefully both, will be getting a lot of DMs on what you just answered, because the way you did that, to me, is such a smart approach. And I'm with you. In the beginning, When we first started our company in 2005, we went through, hey, here's our mission, here's our vision, here's our values. Hey, let's stick it on the wall. And nobody ever looked at it. And then I think it was you, Al, that brought it up a couple of years ago and said, no, let's go through it. Now we call them our guiding principles. And I know Al has some stuff to say about this, because when people are asking, well, what do I do here? I've heard Al say, well, what would the guiding principles tell you to do here? Right. So Al can talk about that a little bit further. But there's so much gold in your answer, especially for younger companies. I mean, I think if I was listening to a podcast when I first started with Al and Joe, and I heard what you did, I'd be booking a meeting on Monday with Al and Joe to say, okay, who are our key players? Let's brainstorm for a bit and do exactly that. And then find out the attributes of the people that we want to build with. And I think you didn't touch on it, but I believe it to be true, because I operate on the premise that really good people know other really good people. And that's how we get introductions consistently to the podcast. And I think what you do by involving those people and the people that you want to grow within your organization, well, they probably know other people that are similar to themselves, that they can say, hey, here's what we're doing over at our company. If there's an opportunity, I'd love for you to come in and be part of that. So I think you've done such an excellent job there. And again, I think you will get a lot of DMs on that answer alone. So I'm really happy that you're able to do this.
Happy to answer them if they come in. You know, it's obviously a topic I'm passionate about. And
clearly, yeah.
I think that is valuable and undervalued in a lot of cases.
And I'll build a little bit on that too. And Robin mentioned it. The one thing that you said that I think, again, that we made the mistake way back when of, you have to come up with your core values, or like you say, mission and vision, because that's what you do when you're starting a new business, right? Someone tells you that you need to do that. So, and you do it, and you do it in good faith, and you do it with best intentions, and then you forget about it. So I like what you had said about coming back, revisiting it, getting people to submit the stories about it and how they've lived those values, because that keeps it front of mind with everyone. Like you say, it reinforces. Now, I'm going to ask you one thing, and maybe this is a little bit of an opposite look of things. Do you ever worry that you're getting too much of the same?
To clarify, of the same?
The same type of people that think the same way, that won't bring new ideas and different ideas, because their values might be the same, but their thought processes might also be the same, and they might not bring new ideas to the table.
Yeah, I think that's a common, I feel like, misconception around behavior-based values. And you called it out there a little bit too, which is that how someone thinks and how they behave are different to me. And I think that a lot of people would say, well, are you getting the right diversity of thought if you're hiring everyone that has these traits? I would say, maybe to even not use the word traits for a second, it's sort of like it's demonstrating the behaviors that we want, right? Like, you can solve with simplicity, which is the behavior we want, and you can have different thoughts of how to get there. You can have different creative ideas of how to get there. So I don't think, at least in my experience, that we haven't seen any sort of like groupthink from an outcome of having behavior-based values, because I think they're quite different in how you think.
So you're basically, you're focusing on the values, but you're still getting people that can bring different things to the table and still show you those behaviors and those values that you want in the company.
Absolutely. Like acting like an owner and someone who's leading a project, and the way they approach that project is going to be completely different from person to person. But they still all acted like an owner in the way they handled that project.
Right. What's the future look like?
For 7Shifts or the industry?
Well, for 7Shifts or for you?
In terms of when I think about the future, one of the things that I never imagined was getting to where we are today, first of all. I think that it's helpful to take a step back, and that's something I need to get better at and really reflect on where we're at in our journey. But I think that this is a long-term thing. And if I could almost go back and tell everyone that's starting a company that is excited about something, make sure you get into it for the right reasons and that you're passionate about it and you're passionate about the problem. And there's a thousand ways to build a company, and you don't have to, you can build a 1-year company, you can build a 3-year company, you can be a 10-year company. I think for us, we see this as like a very long-term business, and doing that means making decisions, making investments in areas that we continue to see opportunity in long-term. And when I think about the future for us, it's sort of like, we're very early days in our horizons and our vision. So horizon one, building out the employee journey, which to us means hiring, training, scheduling, paying, and retaining. Horizon two, it's sort of overlays with that a little bit around building out a really great HR platform where partners can seamlessly integrate with 7shifts and build integrations on top of. And long-term, we think there's a really big opportunity to expand and rethink hiring in hospitality. And because we're used by 1.3 million restaurant workers, which is about 1 in 10 in North America, and nearly 50,000 restaurants, and we're trusted by both worker and employer, we think there's a big opportunity to help level the industry up by matching workers with opportunities in our database of restaurants, help people hire better people faster, and honestly, elevate the industry as a whole. I think that that is our advantage long-term, given the data that we have. We know who shows up on time. We know who picks up shifts for other people. We know what point of sales they're trained on, what certifications these employees have. I think if we can use this data for good and really empower and help these workers get opportunities where they can learn in the industry, whether it's a part-time, full-time, or on-demand job, doesn't matter. There's a lot of work we can do in the industry. And also separately help operators fill roles when we predict that they're going to need folks. I think that this is a tough industry, and it's one that employers see as sort of a revolving door of resumes and hiring. And I think that so much room for improvement. And I think that we can contribute to that improvement.
Well, I like what you said earlier about when you focused on the restaurant business, you saw it as a challenge, right? You could have gone into easier industries, but you saw this as a challenge and something where there was so much opportunity.
Yeah, the obstacle is the way is how it feels. Like the thing that was sort of right in front of us saying like, no one's going to go here. It's not a good place to go,
yeah.
But because no one's gone here. And
yeah,
if you want to go here, you got to push this boulder up the hill.
Yeah,
and we're still doing it and having fun.
Well, you know, Jordan, part of the reason we do this podcast is to have these conversations, because not only are we trying to highlight the guest, and obviously there's a lot of benefit for us, but just meeting people and having people in your network. Because the energy that I was feeling when you were talking about the future of your company, and I have nothing to do with your company, obviously, but I begin thinking about our own company, the energy I get that, and I know if there's one of those down days, the network that we have now, I know I can phone up Jordan and just have a chat and feed off of some of that energy. And I know, you know, it's nice to have this network of people. And I said to Al, the community that's building around people like yourself, where we do have people connecting and talking to each other, it's, I think it's really beneficial for entrepreneurs and business owners or people just working in companies to know, hey, we all have these challenges, but we're all trying to solve a problem, help people. So I really liked your answers today. We've got one more if you're up for it, and that is Al's signature question. It's a little more philosophical, but I hazard a guess you probably have an answer for it. So I'll let Al take it away.
Wonderful. Well, here we go then. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you might be planting?
Yeah, I think about that a lot in the context of where we're building this business. And what I mean by that is I'm based in Saskatchewan, and there's not a whole lot of tech companies here. And to really build something that competes on a North American scale, eventually a global scale, I feel like gives a lot of pride to people in a place where they don't think, and most people don't think you can do it from. And, you know, we're not in the Bay Area. We're not in New York. We're half Saskatoon, half Toronto. And then we have a number of folks throughout Canada. And so I think that to me, what's most exciting is giving the folks at 7shifts this, having them contribute to what we're doing. And as 7shifts sees success, and as we go through our exit long-term, whatever that may look like, how many of these folks then kind of spur off, start other companies in our backyard? How many of them start investing in their communities? And that is most exciting to me, is the outcomes of what everyone else will do based on the learnings and the success that we have when we accomplish something together.
Great. That makes a lot of sense. And I certainly look forward to hearing about your successes, because as you say, you're in an industry where a lot of people would say, yeah, what are you doing in the restaurant industry? That is a tough gig. So it'll be great to hear about your successes.
Thanks.
Well, this has been awesome. Thanks for joining us today, Jordan. It's been great getting to know you, and I'm sure we'll continue the conversation, and appreciate you sharing your story. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing at 7shifts?
Yeah, they can look me up on LinkedIn, Jordan Bosch, and send me a message, connection request. I will reply. I reply to everyone. So hit me up there. If you want to email me too, you can. Jordan@sevenshifts.com. Pretty easy.
All right. That's awesome. Well, that does it for another episode. I really enjoyed this conversation. I hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. And remember, success leaves clues, my friends.